There's this specific muscle memory that I think every single person who's worked in an office for the last 20 years has. It's ingrained in
Oh,
us.
I know exactly where you're going with that.
Right. You get an email, it has an attached, maybe it's called something like Q1 financials or contract amendment V2. You open it and you see that yellow bar right at the top of the screen. And the golden rule, the one commandment we were all taught, is do not click enable macros.
It was the digital equivalent of don't open the door for strangers. As
Amen.
long as you didn't click that one button, the vampires couldn't come in.
Exactly. Keep the macros off and you're safe. But here's the thing, and this is why we're doing this deep dive today. What if I told you that rule is, well, effectively dead?
It is.
As of February 2026, so literally this week, the goalposts haven't just moved, they've been completely dismantled. We're looking at a situation where you don't need to click a link, you don't need to enable macros, you don't even have to fully open the file to lose control of your computer.
It sounds like fear-mongering, I know.
Yeah.
But when you look at the Red Alert technical analysis that was released by the AI security team at Taking Game this week, Game Changer doesn't even quite cover it. We're dealing with a total paradigm shift in how malware gets into a system.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, our mission is to unpack this zero-click crisis that is currently hitting Microsoft Office 2026. We are going to break down exactly how a group called APT28 is weaponizing your inbox, why your expensive antivirus might be totally blind to it, and the specific, somewhat technical steps you need to take today, not tomorrow, today, to lock this down.
And we should be clear up front, this isn't some theoretical paper. This is happening out in the wild right now.
So let's start with that headline term that's scaring everyone, zero click. I mean, it sounds efficient, almost like one click shopping, but in cybersecurity, efficiency is usually bad news for the victim.
That's a good way to put it.
So walk us through the difference between the old way of getting hacked and this new reality.
Sure. So historically, hacking was almost always a transaction. It required a user error. A hacker sends some bait and you have to bite. You click the phishing link, you download the suspicious.exe file, or yeah, you agree to run the malicious macros.
Right.
There's always a moment, however brief, where the user had to give permission, even if they were tricked into doing it.
I had to physically turn the key. Maybe I didn't know a robber was on the other side, but I still unlocked the door myself.
Precisely. Zero click removes you from that equation entirely. In this specific exploit found in Office 2026, the vulnerability triggers automatically. The Taking Game report details a flaw deep in the way Office processes what it calls external objects and metadata.
Okay, let's peel that back a bit. When you say external objects, what are we actually talking about inside a standard Word doc?
So think of a modern Word document. We think of it as just a sheet of digital paper with text on it, right? But it's really a container.
A container.
Yeah, it holds images, charts, graphs, embedded spreadsheets, all sorts of metadata. The vulnerability here is a memory corruption issue, specifically within the graphics processing
The
library.
graphics library.
Yeah.
So the part of Word that's just responsible for like rendering a picture or a company logo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The attackers have figured out how to craft a malicious object, and it might look like a totally standard company logo in the header. That contains malformed metadata.
Okay.
And when the graphics engine tries to render that image, it gets confused. It triggers a buffer overflow or a memory error. And in that split second of confusion, the malicious code slips out of the data structure and executes directly in the system's memory.
So the engine tries to read this image, gets confused, and in that confusion, the hacker just slips right through the cracks.
That's it.
And this brings us to the part that I think is going to terrify everyone listening. Because of where this flaw lives, you don't even need to be in edit mode, do you?
No. And that's the aha moment in the Taking Game report that made my blood run cold. We all rely on protected view, that sandbox mode where you can read a document safely, but you can't edit it.
Yeah, the look but don't touch mode. I use that all the time thinking I'm safe.
This attack bypasses it completely. The report highlights a bug in the access control layer, but it gets worse.
How does it get worse?
Think about how you check your email in the morning. You open Outlook. You see a list of emails, you click on one, and it shows up in the preview pane on the right side.
Yeah, I do that 100 times a day. I scan the preview to see if it's important enough to actually open.
That's it. That is the infection point.
Wait, just the preview. I haven't even double-clicked the email to open it fully in its own window or anything.
It doesn't matter. To show you that preview, Outlook has to render the document.
Right.
It calls up that same graphics library we just talked about. The moment that preview loads on your screen, the code executes.
What?
You could be sipping your coffee, scrolling through your inbox, hover over an email from HR for 2 seconds, and your machine is compromised.
That completely breaks the mental model of safety we've all built. We've always assumed that looking is safe and running is dangerous. This turns the act of just seeing the file into a high-risk activity.
It weaponizes curiosity.
Oh.
And it weaponizes efficiency. We want to see our emails quickly, so we all leave the preview pane on. That convenience is now a vulnerability.
Okay, so we know how they're getting in. Now let's talk about who is knocking. The report points the finger directly at a group called APT28, also known as Fancy Bear. Now, for anyone who hasn't been tracking the major cyber espionage players for the last decade, give us the profile. Who are these guys?
APT28 is a heavy hitter. This isn't a couple of teenagers in a basement trying to steal your credit card number for a shopping spree on Amazon.
Right.
These are what they're widely assessed by cybersecurity experts to be linked to state intelligence services. They're disciplined, they're well-funded, and they play the long game.
So they aren't just smash-and-grab robbers. They're installing listening devices.
Exactly. They want intelligence, leverage, and disruption. The Taking Game report identifies their primary targets in this 2026 campaign as diplomatic entities and energy companies, high-value geopolitical targets.
The report also mentioned the crypto sector, which seems, I don't know, a bit divergent from diplomacy.
It is, but it makes sense if you consider the economics of cyber warfare. Even state-sponsored groups need funding, especially off-the-books funding for other operations. But because they're targeting these high-stakes victims, their delivery methods are incredibly sophisticated.
They're not just spamming millions of people?
No, not with you-won-a-lottery emails. They're using advanced social engineering.
Spearfishing.
Spearfishing on steroids. They might send you a document that references a specific project you are actually working on with the correct file naming conventions your company uses. They have done their homework before they send that email.
So let's say they get past my skepticism. I preview the email. The graphics library glitches, the code runs. What happens next? Because the report mentions this malware is polymorphic, and that word sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie.
It does, but it explains why your antivirus is likely failing to catch this. Traditional antivirus software works on signatures. It has a database of known bad files, basically a book of digital mugshots. It scans a file, looks at its fingerprint, and says, aha, this matches a known virus.
So it's matching mugshots to faces.
Right. But polymorphic malware changes its face every time it executes or copies itself. It literally rewrites its own code structure, so the fingerprint changes constantly.
So the antivirus is looking for a suspect that doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly. Endpoint detection and response systems, or EDRs, are supposed to be better at this because they look for behavior rather than signatures. But even EDRs are struggling here because of how quiet this intrusion is. Once it's in, it establishes a permanent backdoor, which means even if you somehow realize that one Word doc was bad and you delete it, it doesn't matter. They've already installed a secret entrance. They can come and go, extract files, take screenshots, turn on your microphone, whatever they want. They own the machine.
I want to dig a little deeper into the stealth aspect here. The source material uses the term fileless malware. Now, to a layperson, that sounds like a contradiction. Malware is software. Software is files. How can it be fileless?
It's a fascinating, if terrifying, evolution in malware design. Traditional malware places a file-like virus.exe on your hard drive. So if a forensic team comes in and scans your hard drive, they find it. Fileless malware lives entirely in the RAM, the random access memory.
So it's just floating in the system's short-term memory?
Exactly. It injects itself into legitimate system processes. It's not a file sitting on the disk. It's a ghost in the machine's active thoughts.
Which makes it incredibly hard to catch.
And incredibly hard to analyze forensically. If you pull the plug and shut down the computer, the RAM gets flushed. The evidence literally vanishes.
That's the perfect crime.
It's certainly designed to be. And the way it communicates back to the hackers is just as slippery. The report talks about DGA domain generation algorithms.
I saw that in the notes. It sounds complicated, but break it down for us. Why do they need an algorithm to generate domains?
So once the malware's in, it needs to phone home to a command and control server, the C2 server, to upload your stolen data. Usually, security teams will spot that connection. They'll see your computer talking to a suspicious site like, you know, stealyourdata.com, and they'll block it.
Right. They just blacklist the bad website. Simple.
But DGA beats the blacklist. The malware and the hacker's server share a mathematical algorithm, a secret formula that's based on time. And this formula generates a new, random-looking domain name
every single minute.
Every minute.
Every 60 seconds. So at 12:00, it's talking to dhqkw.com. At 12:01, it switches to plmxc.net. Even if a firewall identifies that first one and blocks it, the malware has already moved on. It's a moving target that never stops moving.
It's like trying to catch a fly with chopsticks, but the fly is teleporting every 60 seconds.
That is a great analogy. And all of this sophisticated evasion, the polymorphism, the fileless execution, the DGA, it's all hiding inside what looks like a boring office document.
Which brings us to the XML secret mentioned in the Taken Game report. I think most people don't realize what a docs file actually is. We just see the icon.
Right. We see the blue W icon. But under the hood, a .docs file is actually a zip archive. If you change the extension to .zip, you could open it and see a bunch of folders. And inside those folders is XML code just text files that tell Word how to structure the document, where the margins go, what font to use.
And that's where the needle is hidden.
The hackers are burying their malicious scripts deep within those XML layers. Because XML is a legitimate part of the code structure, it's very hard for security scanners to differentiate between good document structure and bad malicious instructions until it's actually processed by the application.
It feels like we've entered a new era. The report actually frames this as a shift from human versus human to AI versus AI.
That's the bigger picture context here. The speed of these attacks changing domains every minute, rewriting code on the fly, it's just too fast for human analysts.
Yeah.
You can't manually update a firewall rule every 60 seconds. You need defensive AI that can spot the pattern and react in real time against the offensive AI.
It's getting sci-fi in here. But speaking of heavy computing power, there was one victim group in the report that really stood out to me. We talked about diplomats and energy grids, but...
gamers?
Yes. It seems out of place, doesn't it?
Why on earth would sophisticated state-sponsored spies care about someone playing the latest RPG or shooter?
It's not about the secrets the gamer has. It's about the hardware they own. The report highlights that gamers are being targeted for cryptojacking.
So hijacking the computer to mine crypto.
Exactly. Gamers have high-end GPUs, graphics processing units. These cards are incredibly powerful for the kind of mathematical calculations you need to mine cryptocurrency.
So while you're asleep, your $2,000 graphics card is working for Fancy Bear and potentially broning itself out in the process. The malware is smart enough to throttle itself when you're using the computer so you don't notice, but the moment you step away, it just ramps up.
That's insidious. You're paying the electricity bill for their espionage funding.
The report advises users to watch for the physical signs. Is your system slowing down unexpectedly? Are your fans spinning at jet engine speeds when you're just looking at a blank desktop? If you open a Word doc and your computer suddenly sounds like it's trying to take flight, you might have been cryptojacked.
And it's not limited to Windows anymore, is it?
No. The cross-platform risk is real. The vulnerability is in the Office code base, which is shared across platforms. The Taking Game analysis notes a trend toward attacks that work on Windows, Mac, and even mobile. A file might be safe on one device but trigger on another, or worse, infect all of them to create a botnet.
Okay. I think we have successfully terrified everyone listening. We've got invisible malware, shape-shifting code, and documents that attack you just by being looked at. We need to pivot to survival. The Taking Game team didn't just drop the bad news. They gave us a checklist.
They did. And this isn't just best practices or good hygiene anymore. This is triage. If you are listening to this, you need to do these things immediately.
Let's run through it. Step one.
Step one is the patch. It sounds obvious.
Yeah.
You have to force it. Install the February 2026 Microsoft Security Update. It's a big one, about 150 megabytes. But it contains the specific fix for that memory corruption bug in the graphics library.
Do not hit remind me tomorrow.
Do it now. Manually check for updates if you have to.
Step two involves something called attack surface reduction. That sounds like military jargon. What is it and how do we use it?
It's a feature in Windows 11 and 12, usually found in the security settings, or for enterprise users, in group policy. Think of it as putting handcuffs on your applications.
Handcuffs on Word.
Exactly. By enabling attack surface reduction rules for Office, you are telling the operating system, hey, Word is allowed to type text, but it is not allowed to launch other programs or create child processes.
So even if the malware triggers, it hits a wall because Word isn't allowed to call out to the system.
Precisely. It limits the damage potential significantly. It keeps the fire contained in the fireplace.
Step three. This one is going to hurt the efficient people out there. I know it's going to hurt me.
It hurts, but it saves you. You have to kill the preview pane.
Turn it off.
Turn it off in Outlook. Turn it off in Windows Explorer. Until you are absolutely confirmed, patched, and secure, that convenience is a vulnerability. You cannot afford to let the rendering engine run just because you hovered over a file.
It's going to slow down my workflow. I love glancing at emails without opening them, but I guess a ransomware attack slows you down more.
That's the trade-off. Convenience versus security. In this specific moment, convenience is dangerous.
And finally, step four, process monitoring. This is for the more tech-savvy listeners who want to see what's going on under the hood.
Right. The experts recommend using a tool like Process Explorer, which is a beefed-up version of Task Manager. You want to keep an eye on winword.exe.
That's the word executable.
If you have a document open, look at what that process is doing. Is it establishing network connections? Word generally shouldn't be talking to the internet just to edit a local file. If you see it reaching out to strange IP addresses, especially if the report mentions connections to Eastern Europe or unidentifiable clouds, that's a huge red flag.
And if we see that,
pull the plug.
Yeah.
Disconnect the internet immediately.
Yeah.
Stop the data exfiltration before it completes.
It really comes down to a complete shift in mindset. We used to trust things by default.
That's the zero trust concept. We hear the buzzword a lot in corporate IT, but it applies to individuals now too.
What does zero trust look like for me, just sitting at my desk at home?
It means the days of implicit trust are over. You used to trust a file because it came from a coworker. You trusted it because your antivirus didn't beep. Zero trust means you assume the network is already hostile.
Guilty until proven innocent.
Exactly. You don't open an attachment unless you have verified with the sender via a different channel, like a text message or a phone call, that they actually sent it.
So I get an email from Brooke in accounting with a file. I don't just open it. I text Bob, hey, did you just send me a financial report?
And if Bob says no, you delete it. That 30-second text message is the most effective firewall you have. Because in a world of AI-driven spoofing and zero-click exploits, your intuition is no longer enough. The from address can be faked. The writing style can be mimicked by AI. The only thing you can trust is out-of-band verification.
It's a heavy reality check. We're living in a world where the very tools we use to build documents, emails, spreadsheets are being weaponized against us.
It highlights that security isn't a product you buy. You can't just install Norton or McAfee and go to sleep. Security is a process. It's hygiene. You brush your teeth every day. You verify your emails every day.
Before we sign off, I want to leave everyone with a thought from the source material that really stuck with me. We tend to think of documents, PDFs, docs, as passive things, like digital paper. We write on them, we read them, they just sit there.
But that's the illusion, isn't it?
Exactly. We are entering an era where documents are no longer just passive containers of text. They are potential active combatants. If a text file can live in your RAM, think for itself using AI, and change its own code to hide from you, what does that mean for the future of digital trust?
Can we ever truly trust the written word again if the paper itself is a spy?
That is the question of the decade. Something to mull over while you go disable your preview pane.
Verify everything.
We'll see you in the next deep dive.